Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the new media show. My name is Todd Cochran, and I've got my co-host with me this morning coming from cloudy Seattle, Rob Greenlee, on the bottom of the Hollywood Squares. Good morning, Rob. How are you doing?
Doing great, Todd. It's great to be back. I spent almost a week in Arizona, and it was hot, and now I'm back to normal Seattle weather.
Well, you know, that hot weather in Arizona isn't going to last very long. The snowbirds will be coming down, and it'll be cooling off, but they'll be making their transition soon. But I want to welcome our guests this morning. Rob, why don't you go ahead and introduce Marty? You and him are buds, and you do it 10 times better than I can.
Well, in the other square is Marty Reamer, who's a longtime broadcast radio fellow in the Seattle market, has had many shows on I don't even know how many radio stations. He probably needs to elaborate on that. But has also started a podcast, and he's actually doing a podcast on a weekly basis now. I think you started out daily, didn't you, Marty?
Started out daily, yeah, after getting released from my radio duties.
Yeah, and then you are doing it weekly now, but you focus a lot of your show on local topics. And I thought that was a fascinating direction for podcasting, to get more local. And wanted to find out a little bit more of your thoughts on that and how you think the transition from broadcast to podcast to broadcast phenomenon is going out there. So,
well, thank you guys very much, both of you, Todd and Rob, for having me on the show. And it's, you know, despite the fact that Rob and I live literally blocks away from one another, it's beautifully, beautiful sunny here where I am. So I don't know what's going on over at Rob's place. But it's gorgeous here.
Rob's got to get that brown tint peeled off the window. He wants everyone to feel sorry for him when he's doing the show, that, you know, knowing that I'm out here in sunny Hawaii.
Yeah.
Man, I think I'm getting roasted here. I think is what's happening.
You know, the whole topic around local podcast content is kind of, to me, is a new, completely new subject, because, you know, the audience, you know, I'm used to talking to expats in Singapore and people in Tokyo and guys that are living all over the world that listen to my show. And I've never really thought of podcasting to be too much local. And here's the Mac Mini giving me an announcement. I'll fix that.
Well, Todd, it's kind of getting to a point now, right? I kind of just expect it to happen.
Yeah. So. I had it fixed for the last show. It's come back. You're next, Rob, to get the squeeze.
I know. So when's it coming? I'm waiting.
So I guess now, you know, if you're doing a local show, you're probably going to track the ex-Seattleites, I guess, as well, too, won't you?
You know, that was one of the considerations. You know, I've actually had this conversation with Rob, whether this strategy is the wisest one, because I think most of us that get into this new form of media realize the best strategy is to come up with a very narrow niche that is applicable to the entire world. That is, you know, the way everyone has kind of built up their podcast framework, you know, come up with something that appeals to, you know, that people get really passionate about, but that someone in Germany could listen to, or someone in Florida or Hawaii or Seattle. And because my background was radio, and because I saw the direction that the radio industry was heading, which for me was depressing because I've always been very passionate about the medium, I wanted to try to recreate that magic. And what I feel radio, terrestrial broadcast radio, is doing horribly wrong is they are playing to all their weaknesses. And I think one of the strengths that radio has is that connection with the local community. And I wasn't ready to let that go. Now, whether that proves to be a smart business decision, I don't know. I mean, and then we compensate by saying, yeah, there are a lot of Seattle expats who are interested in what's going on back in their old hometown, who don't live here for one reason or another, maybe even, you know, not necessarily by their choice, they don't live here. And so that's what we do. Whereas if we ended up doing a show that was just completely generic, you know, just a typical morning radio show and talking about, you know, all the national issues, we feel like we have nothing special to offer in that regard. And especially, you know, I mean, all the guys that I know personally, these stand-up comedians who do amazing podcasts, and they originate a lot of them from New York and LA, and they have access to these A-list celebrities. And I'm like, well, yeah, I can't compete with that in Seattle. But what I can compete with is I can offer a Seattle perspective just about better than anyone else can.
And, you know, I think back, you know, I grew up in a, quite honestly, a very, very small town. But, you know, my desire to have a connection back there really doesn't extend much beyond, you know, people I grew up and were friends with. But I think for bigger communities, I think people want to keep abreast of what's going on. And I think it probably has it will work for a local market. But at the same time, are you trying to, you know, you're trying to intermix, you know, do part Seattle stuff, part national, or is it 100% focused on Seattle?
Well, I would say it's probably 90-10, but then even the topics that we discuss that are national, we try to bring back and try to figure out what relevance they have to the folks back here in Seattle. So everything does. And in fact, that was a great revelation I had. When we started out, we were doing more of that generic morning talk show type format. And then as we were trying to find our way and trying to figure out how to compete in this landscape, we decided, yeah, it seemed to resonate better with our audience. We seemed to get better numbers when we really always brought it back to what does this mean to Seattle? And, you know, we do it with a great deal of humor. We have live bands, we have live musicians performing every single show. Again, that was not the intent when we first started this out, because we weren't doing that on the radio side. Just a little bit of my background. In 2009, I was doing a morning show at a radio station here in Seattle called The Mountain, and was fired, essentially. I mean, my contract wasn't renewed. And for the first time in my career, it was the first time I'd been fired, but it was the first time that I'd witnessed Facebook playing a significant role in a radio station being free to make its programming decisions. Because the day after we were fired, I think I had 500 Facebook friends. A month later, I had 5,000. And social media was really instrumental in creating this groundswell of anger at the radio station for having let us go. And we were trying, we saw that happening kind of around us, even without us stoking the fire. And we were saying, how do we capitalize on this? And that's when I went to some conference and the guy said, look, radio is going to be dead in 5 years anyhow. Podcasting is the new thing. And everyone in radio should start a podcast, and it's great. And it struck a chord with me, because I thought when I was a little kid and I dreamed of being on the radio, I always thought if I could just be in my basement here, which turns out now I am, if I could be in my basement and I could do my thing, my broadcast to the masses, that would be awesome. And now I realized I can do that. The technology is available. So we started doing this radio show kind of, if nothing else, to put a stick in the eye of the man who fired us. And then within a year, they had to hire us back, or they hired me back, and they didn't hire my partner back. And it was a bad decision to go back, because radio really is on its last breath. And then that's when, you know, as Rob pointed out, we started out doing it daily. And then when I went back on in terrestrial radio, I transformed it into a weekly podcast, which became more just a passion than anything else. And so when we started this out, we were just trying to recreate what we were doing on the radio. And then local musicians in Seattle, as you know, renowned for its music scene, showed a great deal of interest, because their industry had already gone off the cliff. And they were like, we love what you're doing with this podcast and this kind of guerrilla attitude, you know, fighting back against the big, you know, corporate media interests. And so then we started having bands on, and it kind of grew from there.
you know, when we started this whole, when podcasting kicked off, a lot of people said, it's a revolution. And I said that it's a evolution. Of course, I'm wearing a revolution shirt today. I've never found an evolution shirt. I guess if someone saw me wearing an evolution shirt, they would think I'm some sort of religious freak or something. But
or anti-religion freak.
Or anti-religion, yeah. So, but anyway, you know, I think the radio thing is just so weird. You know, here in Hawaii, you know, we have Clear and Clear and Clear. You know, the Clear Channel is like 20 stations or something. And I think they all play the same thing, but it's you know, they had a couple of guys that were doing talk on AM, and you know, they were typical drive time guys, you know, the political scene, and one guy was more entertainment type stuff, but the entertainment guy got bounced and he was gone. And I turned the radio on one day and he wasn't even there no more. There were some other syndicated show was on. I was like, wow, okay, that sucks. And you know, so, but you know, what do? You just, you find other content. And of course that's why podcasting has become so popular, is that you have that choice now. You're not stuck with the, you know, having to listen to what the man wants you to listen to. You can listen to whatever you want to. Rob, I'm talking the mic here. Go ahead.
That's okay. So what has been the reaction to you starting this podcast as far as your friends in the radio business, and do you get contacts from them from that side to come back and do a show again because of your radio show or your podcast? What's kind of your experience as you kind of move through this process with the transformation or non-transformation of the radio side of your past?
You know, that's an interesting question, because it appears to me that everyone gives me unbelievably positive feedback and respects the medium a great deal, except the broadcasters. Until you've stepped out of the industry, and then it's like an overnight switch. Then it's suddenly, this is awesome. How do you do what you're doing? And I really, really believe in, and I hope I don't come off as, you know, this doesn't come off as sour grapes, but I really believe that those that are in the industry, they see what's coming, especially the higher ups. And they're like, we are going to put our blinders on. We are going to milk what last bit of profit we can out of this cash cow that, you know, we've had a lock grip on for, you know, the last 60, 70 years, whatever. And we just are ignoring, with the exception of, you know, I don't know, the lip service they pay to social media. So they all have their Facebook pages and they post their nonsensical posts and what. It is really interesting, my relationship with broadcasting. They completely ignore it. And whereas everyone else completely embraces it. And yeah, I mean, I can, yeah, I theorize as to why that is and what I just shared with you. But beyond that, I don't know. I don't know why, you know, they all do their, they basically repackage their radio shows and put them on as podcasts. I've been in those meetings. I know exactly what they do. They hear, you know, we hear this term podcasting a lot. You guys should all be doing podcasts. That is a typical managerial edict. Why isn't everyone doing why aren't you guys doing podcasts? You're old. You should be doing podcasts. And then they walk out of the room.
And also I see that you know a lot of those big broadcasters just do a crummy job at podcasting too.
Yeah, well, I seriously, they play to their weakness in both areas. Yeah. But if you really look at broadcasting as terrestrial broadcasting and you say, what is their strength? They are the, you know, for many years, they've been kind of the community anchor. They've been a way through music or talk or whatever, for communities to gather together and create this, you know, common bond because, hey, we like the same music. So maybe we like the same lifestyle, that kind of, that was definitely the case for the radio station I last worked at. I mean, I've never seen a bond so strong between listeners. It was a AAA radio station, which for those that don't know is called, it stands for Album Adult Alternative. Or you can make the A stand for whatever you want. But it was really a group of people who loved discovering new music still, and kind of off the beaten path music, and we were incredibly successful at driving audiences to events and really, I mean, because we were curators for them for the musical landscape, and so the idea that they would come to us and when we suggest, I mean, advertisers were always unbelievably happy, because if we suggested a song, our listeners would give it a chance, and when we suggested a product, they would give it a chance. So that's radio strength, and to put on some canned packaged product that gets programmed in San Antonio is ridiculous. And then the podcasting thing again, they just take, you know, the same product they put on the radio and they just say, okay, just slam that down on the internet. Now we're podcasting. We're in the new media. So why isn't the cash rolling in?
A couple of weeks ago, I got a call from a radio group. I guess let's put it that way. And they say, we got a situation, and you know, long story short is they had a show in one of their markets that had just done incredible national numbers. You know, somewhere in the range of 500,000 people were tuning into this radio show in a very, very small market, that they just were flabbergasted. What is going on here? And they didn't have the data to understand where the audience was coming from. They were hosting their a media on some radio platform CMS thing, and they were like, not kidding, they ended up with like a $25,000 hosting bill because they weren't supposed to be putting media on this thing. And it was, so they had this, just they were in Panic City, and they were shocked to the core that this little podcast from a show in one of their minor markets was drawing 500,000 people, and it was basically it was getting better ratings than any of their other shows in any of their other markets. So I was, you know, kind of like, well, that kind of happens from time to time. So, you know, we got them up on some media statistics, and they're now measuring that show and understanding where that audience is coming from. But it's been a interesting ride in purely the education, I guess, for better words, I hear these, like, on these conference calls, and I hear these long pauses, and I know these guys are all sitting around an office kind of looking at each other with their mouths wide open, like, da-da, you know, it's almost like they, you know, if you can hear a little bell ring, ding, you would know that they just got it, you know, and you know, and I'm also thinking in the back of, and they're probably also thinking in the back of their minds, I am so out of a job. You know, so, you know, and so then, you know, now we're trying to work with them to transition. Now, these guys are a small, they don't have a lot of stations, so they're more flexible. I'd have never have had that conversation with Clear. Clear would have been out, they would have went to their IT people, and they would have, you know, tried to figure this out. They wouldn't have reached out to anyone in this space, but this company just didn't have those type of resources, and they did. And you know, that's what we do, and we got them squared away really quickly, and got their bandwidth bill down, and got their, you know, found out where their show is coming from. So now they're saying, hey, we got these other X number of shows. Let's duplicate what these guys did, and let's get these guys, these other shows, to 500,000 viewers or listeners. And so I think some radio guys are waking up. But these guys, why they called me was the $25,000 hosting bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's like, not, you know, if you think about it, it's not really in their best interest to even make podcasting work for them, because where most of their investment is buried is in the license, in the bandwidth, in the space on the spectrum, on the FM band or the AM band.
Yep.
I mean, a radio station here in Seattle probably still sells for upwards of $10 million. And what are you paying for? Are you paying for the chairs and the transmitters? No, you're paying for the right to use that part of the spectrum. And it's also what has created this incredible monopoly for the broadcast industry, because it's not, you know, pure capitalism. If all of a sudden you want to just open up your own radio station on the band, you can't. There is no more space available. So that's where the primary basis for their asset is. And if they all of a sudden give credibility, credence to this new form of media, which is very democratized, look, Rob can broadcast from his brown, cloudy Seattle house.
And you can broadcast from your basement.
That's right. So if we're all able to do this, all of a sudden it renders their multi-million dollar piece of the spectrum moot. And then they start having discussions with Verizon and saying, well, maybe we can sell this to them for a better use. So I think that certainly has a great deal to do with it. If there are managers like you mentioned that are trying to figure out, okay, wow, we're having some success here. We're getting some traction. How do we capitalize on this? I would bet, you know, ownership is saying, I don't know if that serves us so well, because it really undercuts our primary product.
Yeah, I mean, right here in the Seattle market, Cairo Radio is pursuing podcasting and broadcasting, and trying to figure it out and working those mediums together in a strategy to expand their reach and their content offering. And I know that they're trying to take their shows national if they can as well. So they're catering to both markets. They're catering to the local market and they're catering to the national market. And I think that's what every radio station or every radio group needs to do to be successful in the long run. So what do you think about that, Marty?
Well, I absolutely think that's true. And that's a great strategy. The problem with that is if you create a form, and Cairo is an exception to the rule because they are creating unique content. But if, as most radio stations, especially most music-based radio stations are doing, creating these generic template-based formats, well, there's nothing unique about a Seattle radio station that's playing, you know, Rihanna versus a New Orleans, New York, Dallas radio station that's doing that. So there's no reason to turn that product national and expect to gain any traction out of it. So again, what radio should be doing if they were smart is they would be creating unique original content that, exactly as you say, Rob, then use the web, the podcast platform to create a national brand for that. That is an awesome strategy for radio. But to take, you know, this generic nonsense that radio is spewing out and saying, now we'll put this in on the web and we'll suddenly have an international audience. It's just not going to happen to me, because it's already in all those markets.
And you know, another thing too is that, okay, here's the typical sales guy that's on a radio station. He calls the local supermarket or wherever he's going to get advertising from, which is the power of radio advertising as well, which is king, you know, from the local ad buys. And he says, hey, we're going to, you know, we want you to be on our morning show, three spots an hour. You know, we got a market share of XXX, and then, you know, the supermarket guy, just all he knows is he listens to that station in the morning, and they don't probably even really care too much about market share. They may spree out some number, and the supermarket guy has no clue what that means. What does that equal to in bodies? You know, it's actually it has that on the dial, and then when I'm talking with this radio group, I'm like, okay, here's your numbers. Here's what you're seeing. The guy's like, well, how accurate is that? I'm like, that's within a 1 or 2%. And, you know, that hits them right in the face too, because they're now held to a digital standard. And the digital standard is not forgiving in the least. It's all ties back to the, you know, trying to make some money with this thing. That's what it boils down to them is, you know, they got to figure out how they're going to sell advertising into that digital content. So,
That's the nice thing. You know, Rob and I, when last time we were together, we spoke a great deal about, you know, so, hey, Marty, are you making money doing your podcast? And I said, I'm in a very fortunate position that I don't really need to make money doing a podcast. And I think at first when I embarked on, and it's not that I'm wealthy or anything. It's just that I have a video production company that is my nut. But when I first set out, I thought, sure, I'll be able to make money doing podcasting. And then as I went further down the road, I realized, you know, this trying to make money off of this for me may not be the best strategy. And again, I'm really connected with the world of comedy. So I'm friends with a lot of these guys that have, you know, these comics that have very successful podcasts. And they've all kind of realized the same thing, that to try to sell an ad on a podcast doesn't behoove them as much as doing a podcast keeps them in front of an audience, keeps them relevant.
Yep.
And that more than anything else is what I've gotten out of podcasting. People still write, you know, I get quoted in articles or newspaper reporters will call me up and say, you know, can you talk to this subject? And they have somewhat of a difficult time of describing me because, you know, I mean, it's easier to say he's a radio host than, you know, he's a podcaster.
Right.
But they still call specifically because I'm doing this. Whereas my colleagues who left radio and didn't start podcasting become almost overnight irrelevant.
They're done. Stick a fork in them. They're out of the loop.
So I guess the next question is, what does radio really need to do to leverage their power in the local community? And what type of content are they going to be relegated to in the long run? I mean, I've been thinking about this, you know, a fair amount for the last few years, and it seems like that their strengths are news, traffic, and sports. I mean, if they keep going the direction that they're going, that's pretty much all that they're going to have left, I would think.
What do you guys think? I think radio is going to have to get niche-y, and that's exactly. Yeah. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice here. And that's exactly what they don't want, and because they're a mass medium. They want to go lowest common denominator, try to cast the net as wide as possible. And the downside of that, as we've already discussed, is the fact that everyone in media is doing that. And so now they've created a completely generic product that you can get everywhere else. And in fact, you can get it everywhere else and you can get it more effectively everywhere else.
Yeah.
For a radio station to become a jukebox is the worst decision imaginable, because jukeboxes now are available, you know, by the truckload in so many other varieties that are so much more effective for a listener than radio.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of go through a list of strategies. You know, but you know, the corporate, the execs don't want to hear this because it means giving up quantity for quality. That's really what it is. You want a qualitative audience rather than a quantitative one. And hell, I know this firsthand because our radio station was nothing but qualitative. We had, you know, intelligent, educated, moneyed listeners, but all they wanted were as you point out, all they wanted were the numbers. And so then they kept dumbing it down until, you know, more and more they would lose the qualitative. And actually, in the end, they didn't gain any quantity either. They just lost both. And so ultimately, you know, Cairo here in Seattle, which is, you know, kind of a news talk radio station, they do experiment a great deal, not only in the podcasting realm, but also on the air. They create original content. They repackage that content. They put it on the web. They you know, cut it up and slice it up because, you know, the attention span on the web is, you know, 30 seconds or less. But that's cool to take it and repackage it and repurpose it. You've got all this amazing content. But look, just about every other radio station in town, you're right. If they're not doing news, traffic, and weather, and even the news, yeah. So I don't know. I'm glad I don't own one of the $10 million licenses, because now it's just an ankle weight.
you know, many years ago, I set this rule in my vehicle. Whoever's driving owns the dial. You know, that was the rule in the car. That was Dad's way of being able to control what was, you know, coming out of the speakers. Now I have a 17-year-old. She's driving. I have a 16-year-old. He is practice driving, getting ready to get his license. And of course, that little
dad's scared to death.
We're beyond that. But now, see, it's like Anna gets in the car and she's like, Anna rules the radio. She said, and I control it. Ha ha ha. Looking at me in the sideways glance, like, I got your number, right? So I just have to sit there and eat crow. But so what she does is, you know, she's got 16 FM channels programmed into the radio, and she's click, 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 click. And she says, those suck. And when she, what does she pull out? She pulls out her Android, hooks the Bluetooth to it, hits the playlist, and I listen to her playlist all the way into town. I'm going to tell you, and guess what my son in the backseat's doing? He's plugged into something else. He's listening to his own playlist. He's not listening to his sister's playlist. So if radio thinks that this generation, this connected, and you know, we were up, my youngest is 9. He does not have a device. And, you know, we've set an age. At this age, you'll be able to get a device. But, you know, we're driving down the street the other day and around the school, and my wife and I were commenting that how many, I would say, 7 to 10-year-olds all were carrying a device, plugged in, listening. And I thought to myself, the broadcast people are so screwed. You know, they just have, because it's not only just the podcasting thing, but the whole technology is going to move to the point where they are going to have, if they don't think that this wave is coming, you know, I have a daughter that's 23. She doesn't have a cable subscription. She has a laptop and Netflix and Hulu and a couple other things. And, you know, that is her cable bill. So, you know, us older guys are still probably have a wired connection and, you know, to the cable provider and everything else. So it's just a matter of time.
Well, it's still a $16 billion.
It's true.
Kind of business, right? I mean, if you look at it on a national basis around sponsorship and advertising, I mean, eventually a lot of that money is going to go towards digital, and it exactly where it goes, I think, is up for grabs right now. I mean, you look at like platforms like TuneIn, that is doing a lot of local aggregation of streaming radio plus on-demand radio and podcasts, and more that's getting built into the car. It's, you can get it on your phone, play through Bluetooth, just like you're talking about, Todd.
Yeah.
It's going to be very, very soon when the radio can be completely replaced in the car.
One little anecdote here. I now produce a podcast for UW Medicine. So I was, my company was contracted to do this. Love it. It comes out once a month. It's hosted on Todd's platform there. Thank you very much for creating the products you do. And it not only it they did it right. I mean, when they commissioned us, they gave almost like a Hollywood production. They always say, you know, 50% goes into production, 50% goes into marketing, and that's almost exactly how UW Medicine, University of Washington Medicine, did it. They said, you know, here's 50% for production, and you have to spend 50% of your dollars on marketing. Which I said, man, awesome, that's the way to do it. You can't just post a podcast on a website and hope through osmosis people find it. But it was put me in an interesting position, because suddenly now I had to decide how to distribute these marketing dollars. And you know, I have a ton of old buddies in radio from, you know, 30 plus years in the business. And they're all like, yeah, spend it here. We can put together a great package for you. And I did. I ended up looking at the packages, and it's exactly what you said, Todd. In the end, you know, they were throwing numbers at me and I'm going, that doesn't mean anything. I need to know that people are being drawn to this podcast. That's all I care about, is that people tune in and download and subscribe to this podcast. And I thought, well, what's the best way to do that? The best way to accomplish that is, I can't imagine anyone sitting in their car listening to the radio, hearing an ad for a podcast, writing down the URL, going home and plugging that URL in and downloading. I just, that's too many steps. No way is anyone gonna jump through those hoops. So I went to Pandora. I said, it makes more sense. I could have also used radio streams. But Pandora had better qualitative than most. I mean, the radio streams for most terrestrial broadcasters and see, were throwaways. I mean, granted, you can buy, like, you can own every radio stream in Seattle all the time. You can basically have your ad be the only one running for something like $10,000. It's kind of insane. So I ended up spending my dollars when it came down to it. I said, I'm going to go digital myself. And you know, so I spent half of my marketing budget that way. And then the other half was, social media, just, doing Facebook ads and search engine optimization, that kind of thing. So, and I imagine any marketing director out there is going to face the same situation in the near future and probably make the same decision.
I find it curious that you said search engine optimization. There's a lot of guys that, you know, for me, you know, there's just, you know, last week Google made a switch on their search algorithm. They called it Hummingbird. So the first thing I did is I have a little analysis tool and I went and I ran that baby and made sure, where are we at? Where did we move? You know, where did we move in the stack? And some things we came up in, some things we went down in, we're looking at it. But sad thing is now is Google's made it to, so that all searches are encrypted. So you can't tell what people are, you know, what they're writing in. You can only kind of speculate. So that's going to, you know, that's going to change the whole SEO market in itself. But, you know, a lot of podcasters, I don't think ever think about doing any SEO. Matter of fact, some of them are very, very bad at it because they don't understand that, you know, Google and Bing and Yahoo can all be your friend if you put a little context, you know, in your show notes and your blog posts. Make sure that, you know, you tell them what you did on the show and have something there that Google can index. So, I think it was smart of you to do the SEO thing. So when you advertised, did you advertise it on Pandora? Did you have them actually run some spots pointing you towards your Pandora listing, or how did that work?
Yeah, so what they the package they sold me were 30-second audio spots, and then a banner that goes along with it. So they give you, it's interesting, the old, you know, salty radio veteran, they give me, you know, a guide for the best way to utilize my 30 seconds. But it was pretty smart advice. I mean, they basically say direct people, talk to them like they are special because they are listening to Pandora. And I thought, well, that's kind of cool. You know, again, that's not something radio does, because it's like, yeah, of course you come here. You got nowhere else to go. I mean, radio still has that attitude. Where else are you going to turn? Well, how about like everywhere else? but Pandora really wants to treat their listeners like, hey, there's something special. And so, yeah, when I do these spots, when I create these spots, it's all about, hey, you know, you're listening to some awesome music, but you know, why not take a break and for some cool, you know, interesting, you know, medical research content, check out this UW Medicine podcast. You can click on one of the banners and switch on over and then come on back. Your playlist will still be there waiting for you when you get back. So it was really catering to the unique environment that a Pandora listener finds themselves in. Granted, the other thing that we do for marketing for this UW Medicine podcast is we just do guerrilla marketing, where we literally find websites, message boards where people are discussing the topic that's being discussed. And we go on there and we say, hey, you know, there's this podcast that talks specifically. And I got to say, of all the techniques, that's essentially free, other than the labor, the man hours that we put in here with our company. And that's probably the most effective of the of the three.
And those are the ones that sometimes can get you some major abuse because they're like, oh, you're just coming in here and spamming us, telling us about your radio show. So I always tell people, introduce yourself to the community, put a few, few regular comments in before you drop the bomb on them.
But I understand what you're saying, Todd, and you're absolutely right. If we were, quote unquote, spamming them, but isn't the definition of spam is if you're giving something, someone that isn't at all related what they are discussing. So we're very laser specific. I mean, if they're we just did a show about, you know, some researcher curing color blindness, and we went to message boards where they're literally discussing color blindness and how they deal with it, and we're like, here are these two researchers, it's a fascinating program, you should check it out. So yeah, if we were saying, you know, hey, we've got bright colored condoms that we're selling to you, I could see that isn't appropriate.
That's what Ustream was doing to me. They were I knew I was watching the live stream, you know, kind of monitoring stuff, and Ustream started advertising baby diapers on my tech show, and I was like, none of my, you know, I know my audience and they may need Pampers, but they don't need Pampers from while I'm talking about some science thing or something. So that, believe me, that was the ad that pushed me over the top and saying, okay, let's go to a different platform.
Well, we on our Ustream feed, we always get Spanish cornflakes commercials, and I have no idea what sort of research they've done that our audience not only needs cornflakes but needs them in a foreign language.
I think we're getting the two, you know, what would normally been on a 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, that residual, you know, that, you know, I get guys all call me all the time trying to buy that. And I said, there is none of that. We don't have any of that type of advertising in the podcasting space. There is no residual, you know, this show isn't being rerun at 2 o'clock in the morning, but.
Yeah. The whole ad side, you know, billboards and radio and even TV and a lot of the traditional advertising mediums out there are, I believe, really all under threat right now. Really, how many people are watching TV commercials now where they're not fast-forwarding through them? I think there's fewer and fewer people watching broadcast radio or TV ads. Plus, who's watching or looking at billboards anymore? I mean, even when people are driving down the street, they're looking at their phones, right?
Right.
Or they're walking down the street looking at their phones. Nobody's looking beyond what's on the screen that's in front of them. So I think in the long run, that's where advertising is going to have to go. And the problem is that there hasn't been a lot of success in advertising on small screens. So I think that the whole ad side of things is totally under threat, and it has to evolve and it has to change. And I think podcasting is one very effective place for advertisers to put their money. And I have a sneaky suspicion that that's what's going to happen in the long run. Online video and online sites and apps and things like that, those are going to be where the advertising side lives in the future.
And they're going to have to do it in a way that is different from the traditional model, which is going to be difficult for them to wrap their heads around. It can't really be a 30-second ad or a 3-minute ad or whatever, I'm guessing going to be their inclination, at least in the short term. I think you have to weave it into the content. And I don't mean now do it surreptitiously and like have a Coke can, you know, placed, you know, behind your head. What do you got there, Todd? You got some,
it says GoDaddy.
Some product placement?
Yeah, it says GoDaddy.
My picture, actually, in my feed, my picture blocks out your product placement, so you're not talking to me at all. But I think you're absolutely right. That's where it's heading. And I do some of my best business relationships post-radio have been with Puget Sound Energy here locally. They're really an innovative, you know, they have a very innovative marketing team, and we've worked on all kinds of cool online video content. They created sort of this reality redesigned energy efficient competition that they made into like short little video clips, and they were technically nothing but ads, but they didn't come off that way. They really looked like, hey, this is the local community competing to try to find out if they can remodel their homes and make them more energy efficient at the same time. So, and it did very well for them. So I you're absolutely right. That is the future, Rob.
Rob dropped off for saying he's back though.
Oh my God. Don't make me repeat all that. for Rob's sake.
No,
Rob, we were just talking about the weather in my part of Seattle here while you were gone.
You know, it's, and I think what you're doing there with the electric company is, or the, with that group is smart. And going back to what Rob had said a few minutes ago about who's watching television commercials, you know, I'll be honest, the only television commercial I've watched in the last 5 years are Super Bowl commercials. You know, besides, you know, I just don't have, I think a lot of people are really stressed for time. DVRs were the best invention ever made.
Ever.
You know, yeah. So I can program, unless they block it, I can program to two or three things that I like to watch. And usually what I do is it's, you know, it's 11:30 in the evening, and that's about the time I'm crawling into bed, and I queue up one thing, and in 22 minutes, I can watch a 30-minute program, totally. And I'm done. And
Here's how it's gotten with me. I'm addicted to Breaking Bad. I don't know about you two.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And
this Sunday.
Yes, this Sunday, the big finale. And I really appreciate the production values. And I look at that show and I said, God, I feel bad. You know, they put so much effort into this show and I'm not watching the ad. I should probably just watch the ads. So it's my stupid way of trying to recognize the efforts that they put into that program but then I usually watch like the first block of ads and I go, I'm blowing through the rest of them. But they get me.
But Marty, it's not good enough to just watch the ads. You actually have to buy everything that's advertised.
Buy the product. I'm an unemployed DJ in my basement. I'm not buying anything these days.
I don't think that I have, you know, people say, oh, you're influenced by the advertising. You know, maybe, I don't know. I think I work at a higher level. At least I hope I do, because
I totally agree with you.
I don't
never, I can't recall. And it's so weird because I've made most of my living off of advertising and I can't recall any time when an ad has convinced me to buy something that I wasn't already inclined to.
Right. Yeah.
But maybe subconsciously when I say I was already inclined to want to, you know, like it, maybe that's, they already got to me.
And, you know, I was already using my primary sponsor's product before they came to me, you know. So they were like, I'm like, well, I'm already a fan. I'm already using your product. So this is a no-brainer for me. And the same thing was with another sponsor we run. I was already using their product. And, you know, from that standpoint, they can't beat that because you're giving a testimonial that's true. You're not making some crap up. And I think there's this guy here in Hawaii. I have to laugh because he, a year ago, they had Audi was a big sponsor on a show. So, man, he was talking up his Audi such and such and this and that. And we love driving around town and blah, 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 blah. And then it switched. It wasn't Audi no more. It was BMW. And I thought, okay, so what's this guy going to do? Is he going to sell his Audi and now get a BMW? And it was a couple weeks. And my wife and I, we went down to BMW and he talked about, and so I'm thinking to myself, okay, so you know he got a heck of a deal on that new BMW.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was so funny that, you know, just like that, he become in love with a BMW. And so that, I think, to me, is disingenuous. I think it's okay. You're switching car manufacturers to basically make that advertiser happy. I've had companies call here that want to advertise on the show that has similar products as one of my sponsors. I'm like, hey, can't run you.
Yeah.
Can't run you. That's, you know, I'll be happy to put that out there for our other folks, but you can't run on my show. And they're like, well, what would it take for you to run, for me to run on your show? I said, you have to write me a check for this amount and then you have to wait a year, you know? And they're like, no. I'm like, well, then, you know, sorry. You know, I think in the digital side, though, the audience, I think, will be less forgiving if you try to do that type of marketing where you are basically jumping ship to a different product.
I will let it be known right here on the show that all I want to do, all I want out of life is a Tesla sponsorship. So please, that's it. Anybody? I will sit down here. I will podcast for you round the clock 24/7 if I can only get a Tesla sponsorship out of it.
Aren't they beautiful?
Oh my gosh, those cars.
You actually just get the car, right? They just send the car. You'll talk about them forever, right?
Of course, Rob. Was I not clear about what I wanted out of that relationship? So, yes, I am such an electric car geek, and that car is like, I'm not really even a car guy, and that car does it for me.
That car has the range. I could that would work for me too.
And for a while, I was doing a Nissan Leaf sponsorship, and I love that car, but. But yeah, the range issue. Although, you know, when you live in a city, it doesn't really matter. It's not really that relevant.
If I was driving what Rob's driving, I would be stranded. I'd have to call a tow truck every day.
What are you driving, Rob?
A Nissan Leaf.
Oh, you are driving a Leaf.
I am. Yeah, I've had it since 2011.
Oh well, then yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so I was driving a Nissan Leaf in 2011 as well, and I loved the thing. I thought that thing was awesome.
I got a buddy that's got a Chevy Volt, and he hates Leafs. You know why? He says they are blood suckers. He says those things, every time he goes to a charging station, what's there? A Leaf. He says they can't find their way home without finding a charging station. So he tactically now knows when certain people are on the charger at certain locations, and he'll get there 15 minutes early just to get on the charger to spite the Leaf owner that may be in a certain building. It's like charger wars.
Todd, I've never run out of charge on my Leaf. Never, ever, ever.
Is that right, Rob? One time I ran out. It was actually on Thanksgiving. I had my parents in the car, and I went up to my sister's for Thanksgiving dinner. She lives about, 40, 50 miles. And I thought, well, I'll charge it up while I'm there. But she only had 120, so it didn't get much. So on the way back, fortunately my parents are on page with me. So they were excited for the adventure of finding a charging station on Thanksgiving night at a Fred Meyer north of Seattle. So we sat there in the parking lot. It was a little cold. I'd be willing to pay that price. In exchange for all the benefits you get from it. Sorry, we're going so far off topic here with this electric car thing, but I'll tell you, Leafs rule over the Volt, because the Volt is that typical, halfway step. And you got to commit all the way, because there are so many benefits to an all-electric car, and you give up all those benefits when you put any kind of a gas engine in.
But to his credit, he's going about 2,000 miles without filling up. So he is using the electricity to the max. So he's in a perfect.
But you still have to have all the maintenance items in the car. The spark plugs and the mufflers and all that are required, even when you have that little gas generator in there.
And the truth is, most people don't drive more than 20 miles a day anyway. I mean, it's like. I think 20 to 40 is what the average I think is for a commute.
I think the average commute, believe it or not, in Hawaii, because of the cost of housing, is about 70 miles a day.
Wow.
Yeah, that's believe it or not. Yeah, it's quite, because a lot of the population lives out here where I do, and there's 200,000 of us that basically commute into town every day. It depends on where in town they work, but I've done the math, and I would be every other day, I'd be on the side of the road
And then also you have to pay really, really high, rates for your electricity.
Yeah.
Too,
36 cents a kilowatt is what we pay here.
I mean,
we don't pay 9 cents here in Washington State.
Yeah. So it'd be four times as expensive. Yeah. Even if
So once again, Todd, Tesla, it's the car of the future.
Yep, I'm Marty Reamer.
Where's my Tesla?
Rob's going to have one. You just watch. Rob is working his way up, started with a Leaf, and he'll,
I had this whole plan laid out back in 2011 because I knew that Model S was coming. I was going to buy the Leaf, keep it for a couple of years, and then trade it in and get the Model S. But the problem is they jacked up the price on the Model S. Now the base price on that puppy now is over 60 grand.
I have a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old, and they know I love my. It was heartbreaking when I gave up my Leaf because my endorsement deal ended, and so now it's probably your car. that we see, Rob, but every time they see a Leaf on the street, they go, "Daddy, he's got your car." And I'm like, "Oh, that hurts."
So there was a comment in the chat room who said, suggestion, start with smaller electric products and try to work your way up to the Tesla. I got a lithium powered lawnmower this year. It's been great.
Is that an endorsement deal? Did you get an endorsement deal? That's what I want.
That's funny.
That's great.
Yeah, I've always thought that from the podcasting space at Stanford, I think that something at Ford, Ford was heavy advertising for a while. They could have really expanded that by having more than a couple of people in the having Ford vehicles, and even if it's just a 1-year deal, just think of the my audience, my tech audience is huge, and if I was talking about my Ford and the experience I would have with that every day, that's huge. And I don't have a Ford. I drive a Mazda. So guess
isn't
what?
That a Ford?
Yeah. And I guess in a roundabout way it is.
It probably has Ford parts in it.
It does. It does. But
that's how you get away with switching your Mazda to Ford endorsement. As you say, it's all Ford after all.
It's all underneath.
And that's what I would have done with the BMW. I would have said, look, it's less about the car. It's more about the people. We happen to love the German people and the cars they make.
So from a relevancy standpoint, I think that like you were saying, the comedians and the guys like you that are they're coming off radio, it keeps you relevant, keeps you in the game. And I think even from a podcaster standpoint, those of us that have been purely digital from the very beginning, I do certain events every year that are strictly, I shouldn't say strictly. There is an ulterior motive, and the ulterior motive is exposure. I do something that is good for the community, that is, it takes a lot of my time, a lot of effort, a lot of sweat and blood. It's not something that I'm getting for free. And do that, and it basically comes back to me in that exposure. So I think a lot of content creators don't do that, and I can see the ebb and flow of doing that, because whenever I have one of these set events that I do every year, my numbers go up. I can tell that the end result has been a net gain of X number of listeners. And then what will happen is over the year, my 9 numbers will go down until I do another major event. And you really have to do that. That's the only way to keep the bell curve but to keep the growth rate going, is you have to stick yourself out there and do something a little different to get a little different exposure, or spend a lot of money marketing. And most content creators don't have big budgets to do a lot of marketing. So they have to go, like you said, go to these social media sites or go to forums or whatever and put your 2 cents worth in and get some credit back that way. But I think that's something that's really sorely missed. Do you find do you still get to, now that, you're doing the local show, do you still get, invites and to local events that helps you keep your face in the space?
Yeah, definitely that. I'm still very much invited to, arenas that broadcasters get invited to, but that is less critical to me than am I able to attract guests into the studio that broadcasters can attract. And right, that has been a bit of a challenge, I think, because podcasting does have this image of being kind of it's not accurate, but it's image of being unprofessional and a little yokel, like, hey, I'm just playing around here in my basement. And that's where I have a bit of an advantage, as having been a former broadcaster, is I can, you know, say, look, I've done radio. I know how to do radio. We do a professional show. It's executed well. And so we do still attract probably 80% of the guests that I got when I was on the air. I think we have Elliot Gould coming in here in a couple weeks to hang out with us. We get all the comedians because that's I have a personal relationship with them. But we do pretty well, you know, with the guests that come in here, and certainly the local musicians, we do very well. So that's more important to me, and that's where I always have to kind of feel a little bit like I have to go, trust me, it's going to be fine. Even though I have a play set in my backyard where you walk right through to come into the studio itself, once they're in, they sort of get it. Once they see the space, they go, oh, wow, this is, I don't know, the camera isn't facing the right direction. And I don't know if this would work for me to flip the camera around.
Sure. Right.
But it's a full on, yeah, there we go. There's the.
So do you put a backdrop up when the bands come in, or how do you set things up for them?
You know, we're primarily audio. I mean, we do the video as well, right. But I'm jealous of what you're set up there, because you definitely have it looking very stylized. No, we don't actually put a backdrop up. We just, you know, let
this
it.
This is some 20-year-old furniture, and really the room is 10 by 12. You can't really tell, but we're squished here in a corner. And you know, my dream is always to have a much, much bigger space, but in Hawaii, that comes at an incredible premium.
Backdrop of yours, that's very very well done with the lighting back there and so forth.
So for a 20-year-old piece of furniture, it's worked out well, I guess. There was something I was going to talk about. Rob, save me here. I had a thought.
I wanted to throw out the whole thing that's going on this coming weekend down in Los Angeles, the LA Podcast Festival. It's a local event down there that's been going on for a couple of years now. And I just wonder if, as we think about Marty and what he's doing and local podcast festivals, I mean, how can we garner more local attention to content in this area? As you look at broadcast radio, their focus has been on local. I oftentimes think that the future of podcasting is a combination of local and national and global. So do you guys think that, podcast festivals that can garner local listeners to connect better with podcasts, even local podcasts or national podcasts, is a direction that the industry needs to go to help grow this into that dream that I think we all have here, that podcasting can be viewed as a real profession and respected, just like radio has, even though probably today they don't really warrant that respect.
I think in a market like Seattle, LA, Chicago, Atlanta, big markets where there's big population bases, it works. Maybe even Honolulu might work. But, you know, from the maybe 20 or so content creators that are here in Hawaii that are really kind of, they come top of mind when I'm thinking about, you know, local folks doing podcasts and even some local talent that's doing some music stuff. I don't know if we would garner a big enough local pull to make it happen. You have to have, you know, here's the key. You got to have celebrities are celebrities for a reason. They pull numbers.
Yeah. Well, no, I think you have to have that at any festival, right?
Yeah.
And Marty and I have talked about this a little bit too, but I think that may be one strategy. I think it's fascinating what they're doing in LA. Now, granted, LA is a little unique, but there are like four or five other cities around the country that are doing these festivals. So, Marty, what do you think at this point?
Yeah, well, you and I, Rob, have talked at length about it. I think it's a fantastic idea. I don't know if it ends. The problem, I mean, it's not really a problem, but the challenge is that if you're trying to promote local, the local aspect of podcasting in order to make one of these festivals work, typically, certainly in the first couple of rounds of doing one of these festivals, you'd probably have to bring in national talent.
Yeah.
And so you somewhat defeat the purpose of focusing on the locals when it's, you know, Marc Maron that would be the draw. And then I suppose you could then wedge in, you know, local talent in between and then have another headline. Sorry.
No, I said, that's exactly what the strategy would be is, you know, you bring in some big name talent that'll bring the audience, and then you have local shows that are there also. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea as I told you, I happen to love live events. And I think, again, it's one of the strengths that podcasting has that unfortunately I haven't exploited nearly as much. I created this amazing, for me, podcast space here. And I love it. But the downside of it is it's made me... it's tied me to this space.
Right.
And one of the wonderful things about podcasting is that you aren't tied to any space.
Right.
You can do amazing programs wherever you happen to have an internet connection. And the few times that we've taken our show on the road, it just fires me up. I don't know if that's what you were referring to earlier, Todd, when you say these special events kind of a thing, but that I love that in this, you know, sort of a live podcast festival would be along those same lines. Take your audience to places where they wouldn't ordinarily get themselves. And I personally did more of that. I just don't have the bandwidth physically in my life to organize something like that.
One thing that we've looked at here in Hawaii and something I've been working on for a couple of years is, you know, we've got this beautiful, beautiful state and beautiful beaches, and, you know, it's and it's just, you know, it's incredible. The lifestyle here is very different than, you know, in the mainland. And, you know, I've been working with a couple of folks, and we're basically trying at this point to secure a space. And my whole mantra behind this plan was, we can't find the space, we can't do the deal. You know, I talked to the investors and says, if we can't find a location where the cameras are seeing the beach and basically having a view, I says, this deal doesn't work. We can't do this local great Hawaii content live in a warehouse. It just doesn't work. You have to do it someplace where the backdrop is real, and you can take a camera and you can walk, you know, 15 feet and you're in the sand and talking to tourists or having a, you know, just, it could be, there's all kinds of crazy things you could do with this. And you talk to hotels, you talk to folks that have these areas, and they look at you like you are from outer space when you tell them, we want to do live broadcast of Hawaiian music, food, local talent, bring in Japanese game shows, you name it, right in a, we need a 20 by, you know, maybe a 20 by 20 space in your building that's faces the beach. And you're like, you know, in your wet dreams, you're going to get this. Not going to happen. They are not going to give up that space. And so this is the, you know, but to me, if I was a broadcaster, if I was a, you know, a television station or a radio guy, man, that's where I would try to be pushing towards. But
I totally agree with you, Todd. In fact, just even hearing you talk about that idea gets me all jacked up. I'm like, yeah, that's a cool avenue for podcasting.
Right.
I'm basically saying that I suck at what I do because I am tucked away here in my own little warehouse, and that's not right. You should be. If I'm going to do a show about Seattle, I should be at the Edgewater Hotel, which is a waterfront hotel with the Puget Sound as my backdrop. You know, that's the place I should be, so that every time someone tunes in, they're immediately in that time and space with me. So I've always argued in my last few years when I worked for the big radio companies, I always argued that putting radio studios on the 16th floor of some downtown high rise, makes no sense.
Right.
We should be, not that it would make my life any easier as a broadcaster, but we should be doing the show from a storefront window at Macy's or something. I mean, we should be downtown where people walk by. Years ago, probably 10 years ago, I traveled to Copenhagen, and in the center of the, one of the their main gathering squares there, I don't know what the name of it is, they had a booth set up that was a broadcasting booth, a broadcast booth. And there was a DJ in the center of this, you know, busy square, and he was playing music and doing his talk. And there were people gathered around watching him because it's interesting. It's interesting to see someone,
right,
you know, whatever, play music or do a chat show from some public location. And so it's got immeasurable amounts of marketing. I don't know why they don't do that. And I guarantee you, you know, you'd find that, I mean, broadcasters would, podcasters still have an uphill climb there. It's convincing, yep, you know, these established business interests to do this, to lend up to lend the real estate. But I know a broadcaster could have walked into Nordstrom and said, hey, let's turn a corner of this into a little broadcast space.
So, you know, and it's not only that, it's the, okay, for example, let's say you're in a hotel property. Give me a room, give me a 3-night package 3 times a week. So basically, give me 9 rooms a week. And what we'll do is we'll give these things away, you know. Mm-hmm. Let's talk to an airline. Let's fly someone that wins a prize out. You know, you tell this to the Hawaiian Tourism Authority and you talk to these hotels and they're like, I'm not giving you 9 rooms. I'm not giving you 9 rooms a week. And I'm thinking to myself, we could change this hotel's, you know, the focus I use is in Vegas. What have they done in Vegas? Okay, hotel's a hotel. How did they get the young kids in the hotels? What did they do? They made their pool areas into places to see celebrities, to places to see hotties in bikinis, and they made millions of dollars in transforming their hotels by having these summer beach things. Mm-hmm. You know, I have summer 365 days a year here, you know, and it's incredible to me the marketing folks' lack of vision and willing to, because, well, you know, you're asking them to really probably stick their careers on their line by doing something like this. But
well, that's where Rob is absolutely right. That's where that's how the billions of dollars are going to slowly start filtering over to this new media, is in strategies like that, not in interrupting and blasting us with a 30-second spot. That's why I think Ustream is wrong to do that. I mean, I don't necessarily have a recommendation for a better business model for them, but for them to interrupt a feed and hit you with some, you know, Spanish cornflakes ad is just not a good strategy. It's really using like an archaic old approach in a new media. And that's a disconnect for people.
Well, yeah, I you can see today, to kind of jump back to the earlier topic that you guys are talking about getting more out there amongst the people and in kind of getting down in a window in an office space. I mean, there is some effort in that direction that you can see in the real world right now. If you go to Times Square, all the big TV networks do their morning programs in front of big windows that people, I mean, I've actually done it. I've actually stood in front of those windows and watched them do those shows.
Yep.
And millions of people are watching from the inside, and thousands of people are watching from the outside in on what they're doing. And it just creates this festive atmosphere that has been very effective for those shows. You guys are both right. I mean, I think that's what we need to do. I think media needs to be more amongst the people. It needs to be more personal. It needs to be more like a virtual vacation. And I think that's what you guys are talking about here, is make the content more attractive, more engaging, more kind of immersive, right? And I think that that's what this online medium gives us the opportunity to do.
You know, and if you think about all this talent that is now unemployed, you know, you can't replace someone that has 20 years of microphone or broadcast experience. Those guys have got technical skills, professional skills that, you know, quite frankly, you know, I'm at this 9 years. And I still feel like I'm barely taking my training wheels off, you know. So the you have all this talent now that is still, you may not be known mainstream, but if you could have a venue for them to transition to digital, I think you would, the radio guys would be done so fast. It would be, I think it would transform the whole digital space. It's maybe it's an idea ahead of its time, but sadly, I think many of these guys that are, you know, like Marty's situation, you had something to fall back to, but you know, some of those guys didn't. What are they doing? Are they selling cars? You know, what's their jobs now?
They're selling cars. They're
doing real estate. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know, and
not going to get any better. The real falling off the cliff will happen. And again, Rob and I had this discussion in person. The real end will happen, and it's just around the corner, when the car companies quit giving the big wet kiss to broadcast radio by giving away that valuable real estate in the dashboard. Yep. When that real estate doesn't automatically go to an FM, and it's already, you already see it when you buy a new car, you have now other options. It defaults apparently back to an AM FM device in the dashboard. But I always say that if radio were invented today, and by radio, I mean like broadcast terrestrial radio were invented today, and the industry went to the car manufacturers and said, you know, we're thinking this would be a valuable product to have in the dashboard of the car. The car manufacturers would say, okay, well, let's open bidding and let's find out how much you really think the dash, because that, you know, you brought up your kids. No one under 30 is listening to radio anymore.
Right.
People over 30 are really only listening to radio in their cars. The days of coming home and going, oh, I'm going to turn the radio on, have a little background, you know, unfortunately, that's over. So the car is everything for this multi-billion-dollar industry. When that device goes and suddenly it's a Wi-Fi receiver and you can pick up whatever you want on demand, then... You know,
let's also look at this from another perspective, and it's financially to the car company's advantage to not have AM or FM be default, because they do a deal with Pandora. They do revenue share. Let's say so all of a sudden over the life of that vehicle, that's going to drive for the next 10 or 15 years. And I don't know what the average lifespan of a vehicle is, but let's just say 10 years. You know, if they make a buck or two or three a month off of that vehicle, you know, that's, you know, it may not be a lot of cash, but they sell millions of vehicles. So, you know, there's definitely ongoing revenue. So the radio stations aren't going to give Ford and BMW an audio revenue share on someone that's got their FM radio turned to 97.6. It's not going to happen. So, dollars talk.
Plus, it's going to become a bidding war.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. It's definitely going to be a bidding war. What do you guys think of how autonomous driving cars is going to play into this whole story? I mean, I kind of think that it may be a huge opportunity for podcasting and on demand radio. That finally drivers are free to do whatever they want in the car, and that even makes it even worse for broadcast radio, is that people can you know, open and close apps on the dash. They can do all sorts of stuff because they're not worried about driving the car.
Right. To me, sign me up. I want one of those more than I want a Tesla. I don't care.
You have two kids. You have two teenage kids. You have an autonomous driving car.
That's true. That only lasts so long. But, it's like, and plus, you know, and I want it for more selfish reason. The traffic here in Hawaii is hell. So I wanted to, you know, not have to, be road raging. You know, that's my goal. But yeah.
Well, I think more and more people, I think if you look in the future, are not going to own cars. They're just going to, pull up an app on their phone and request a car to pick them up wherever they are. And that car is going to pull in, pick them up, take them where they want to go. And they do the same thing to get home. So I think it's an interesting change that's going to happen. But I think it's still going to be good for on-demand radio in the car.
Yeah.
I think it's going to continue to grow and be an important piece of the pie.
Well, guys, we've been at this about an hour 18. We got about 10 minutes before we have to wrap. Rob, I know that you are gone in Arizona. Do we have anybody on tap for next week yet? Or are you still working that? Or
I'm actually going to be gone next week too.
So I'm running solo next week. Okay.
Yeah.
You guys will find out from me who will be on next week.
I thought that the guys last week did a terrific job.
They did. So we had
both of those guys are really knowledgeable and are passionate about this space, no question.
And we're next week's gonna be a little nutso for me too. My hair will become on fire at about 0001 on October 1st, because that's when we open up the nominations for the 9th annual Podcast Awards at podcastawards.com. And so make sure you're ready to have your audiences nominate you in the specific category. Nominations are going to be open for 15 days. And then we go through about a 2-week review process, and then voting will start sometime in late October, with the awards ceremony happening at the New Media Expo in Las Vegas on January 5th, the evening of January 5th. So we want everyone to come over to podcastawards.com and start nominating their favorite shows on October 1st. We are still searching for sponsors. So usually the sponsors start rolling in here about the time we turn on the site, and people are like, oh my God, I have a banner on the website. But we are a little behind this year in fundraising for the trophies and so forth. And because this is an event where I don't make any money on this deal, we give everything back. 100% of what's donated is basically rolled back into prizes. And if we don't raise enough money for trophies, well, not everyone will get a trophy. That's how it works.
It's pretty simple.
Pretty simple, but I have confidence we'll make our goal. We always have.
Todd,
go ahead.
You said something about there's going to be a red carpet or something like that Podcast Awards this year. Yep. What's going on? Did they kind of offer you a deal with a carpet company or something, or what's going on?
We are going to have, I think, paparazzi. We're going to have the full
paparazzi.
Oh yeah, they're taking pictures of people as they come in, and we want people to dress up a little more for this year's awards. We're going to have an official red carpet to the entryway to the hall that's going to hold the awards ceremony. And the goal is to incrementally up the game a little bit. So within the next 5 years, we'll have a full, basically, Emmy production with the comedians and people that are having wardrobe malfunctions and everything else that goes along with an awards event. We would not have a proper awards event without a nip slip or something like that. So. So we have to, we just up. Hey, gotta make it fun for the masses to come, right?
That's right. Yeah,
if you've got a Google alert on nip slip, this show is now going to pop up. Keyword
called
nip
sizzle.
Slip.
Yeah.
So
it's called sizzle, Todd. That's the name of the game here. Hey, do you have a name of the MC?
Yeah, the MC hasn't been confirmed, but Rick and I were talking. And we've got a little bit of a game plan. I'm not allowed to really talk to it yet, but we plan on warming the audience up. I'll leave it at that.
Warming.
And, having a little fun and at the same time being serious. And it's, we're just trying to, and say, come on up, get your award. We're trying to have a little more drama and a little more, some background music and, we'll see what we do. It's all, it's the budget, we have to stay in the confines of the budget. So it's always about that. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I hope that people will come out to the New Media Expo at nmxlive.com January. I think it's the 4th through the 6th, I think is the dates.
So does this mean that I'm going to have to dress up in a tux to go to this thing too? Or what does that mean?
You know, people are going to be able to wear what they want to wear, but we're hoping that people will dress up a little bit maybe, you know, and we'll see how it goes. We had Leo wear a tuxedo last year. And what was I wearing? I was wearing Zoris and I wasn't dressed up at all. So, but we're going to up the game just a tad bit. So we're going to have fun.
Oh, that's good. Glad to hear it.
Yeah, so we're excited about this year's podcast. Get your audience ramped up there, Marty. Tell them to come over and nominate your show. It's all about the numbers and getting the nomination and then the review.
Oh, really? All right. Yeah. We'll do it. We'll stoke a little fire.
Yeah, absolutely. And get them over there. And whatever category you pick, hopefully you can find a category that matches. But we want to make sure the audience also gets over to Marty's website at martyreamer.com. You've done 407 shows?
Yes.
Oh, he's a machine.
They add up quickly when you do them every day. Wow. So since then it's, you know, 52 a year, but yeah, 407 shows. Sometimes I'm amazed by that as well. I'm like, holy.
Yeah. I just did 893 and I've been at this 9 years. So it's holy cow. You know, and I had a buddy of mine, Andy McCaskey, was doing a daily show. He lasted, 5 years doing a daily.
Yeah.
Yeah, daily's hard. Daily's work. You know, it's. Oh.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be work.
No, it's not.
We didn't sign up for that.
But 5 shows a day is if you have a production crew, it's not bad. But when you're a one man show, that's like calling ambulance. I'm going to have a cardiac arrest right here thinking about it. But when do you guys actually stream live as well? It looks like you do live on Friday at 9:30 a.m. Pacific. Is that when you're doing it?
Yeah. Yeah. That was actually the big revelation in designing the show, because I wasn't sure I was going to be able to do a podcast, a pure podcast. I wished I could, but that idea of just recording it and playing it back whenever on demand, I need that sizzle, that kind of like that adrenaline rush that you get from doing something live. And at that time, a friend of mine came to me and said, well, you should just, you know, stream live on Ustream and then record it and post the podcast as is usual. And I went, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. So yeah, it's the Ustream. And I have to be quite honest with you. I think we get better guests. We get more timely guests because we're doing it live. If it were all just recorded, I think our guests who are trying to promote something that's coming up that weekend or that night would say, podcasting, yeah, who knows when they'll listen to this, and we need to be more effective in where we distribute our time. The live thing is both for me and for our ability to attract people to the show.
Yeah, I agree. And, I've always said my only handicap in this space is that I live in Hawaii, because when I'm ready to do my show, it's I do it 8 p.m. on a Monday or Thursday night, and most people are already in bed. So I get Australians and some of our hardcore fans that come out and listen. But for me, the live part was an ends to a means. The live part essentially made me better doing the show, because there's no race. You're live.
Oh, very much so. I love the aspect that it's live. And I've always, and like I said at the very outset here, that I love the medium of radio. I'm sorry. I apologize to people as to what it's become. But this live aspect, it makes this medium much more compelling.
Rob, any final thoughts here before we have to pull the plug on this thing?
Well, I think it was great to have Marty on, and Marty, I have to say your recent guest, Mr. Kerry Bozeman, you know, the mayor of Bellevue and Bremerton.
Oh gosh, that guy was amazing.
He was my very first basketball coach when I was 8 years old.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Basketball coach to mayor, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, so. That guy is amazing. And that's funny. Somebody else, I think, posted that he was their coach when they were a kid. So, he was a fun guest. We've had a nice string of guests lately, again, kind of focusing on Seattle. Plus, we had a great comedian on yesterday, Tommy Jonigan, who people should check out. If you're into smart, clean stand-up comedy, Tommy Jonigan is just brilliant. And he was on the show just yesterday morning.
You know, another thing that's cool about doing podcasts, there's no 7-second delay button. You can just let her rip.
That's true. I didn't ask before I started here whether what your standards are. So yeah, it's really just all about the people that are on the show as to, you know, what they will tolerate.
You know, it's friends of mine that listen to my tech show. They're like, I know how you act sometimes in person. You are very different on your tech show. And I'm like, well, I can't cuss. You know, I can't say sometimes what I really want to say in the most colorful language. But as I've gotten older, I've tempered my palate of of things that come out of it. I think this show here, we're more lenient.
Yeah, you're former Navy, so we would expect that from
you. That's right. I can swear like a sailor at the top of my lungs.
It was a revelation for us when we first started, when we just switched over from broadcast. I mean, it was not shortly after we were off the air on broadcast and we started the podcast. It was a weird thing because we realized technically we could swear, but when you've been a broadcaster as long as I have, it's a weird thing because as soon as you have a microphone in front of your face, it's just programmed. You do not swear. And suddenly we were like, we should try this out. And we were like kids in the candy store. It was like, shit. You know, we just tried out, see how it felt. But I'm a little worried going down that road because sometime down the road, I end up back on terrestrial radio and I don't have that innate sense of there's a microphone. I cannot swear. I have to be careful in that way.
And you know, Rob, far as the Navy stuff goes, they can't swear at sailors no more. It's a gentle, kinder Navy. They have to.
Oh, is
you
it?
Know, they'll never get yelled at in the real world, in the real community. You know, it's never going to happen. So it's all about proper decorum and not over drinking. Okay. And yeah, it's thank God I retired.
I was going to say, I don't really believe that.
No, it's true. I'm quite.
Well, that's the official.
I've got a buddy that is taking a group of sailors to an equivalent of a sea, some water park on Monday because they're having team building. They're going to a water park for team building. team building. When that was team building, where did we go? We went to this. We went to the strip bar. That's where we went. We didn't go to the water park. We went to the strip bar and drank beers till we fell down. That was team building.
Yeah. Todd's a man's man. That's for sure.
Oh my gosh! I can't believe it. Toby's going to the water park. It's like just shoot me. Okay. Thanks, guys. And everyone else is listening to the show. Yeah, there's another side of me.
I know it's there. I know it's there. You guys can't hide it that well. Right.
Okay. So it's Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. And send us your comments, guest suggestions, everything. Marnie, thanks for being on. Definitely, you guys get over and check out Marnie's show at Marty Reamer. reamer.com.
So you can even spell it wrong, and I own that one too. Reimer. Oh, got it.
My God.
I got you either way.
Oh, that's smart because I think I spelled it wrong in the lower third too. So,
hey, I appreciate you guys having me on. I love what you guys are doing here. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, thanks so much for spending time.
Well, thank you.
With us.
You too. You too. Keep that local theme alive.
Absolutely.
Will do.
Everyone, until next time, take care. We'll see you. Aloha.